54%.
Well, I think we'll start, even though we might have some more people coming in, which is fine. I just, first of all, want to welcome you all. I'm Maggie Tinsman, and as you know, I'm from the Quad Cities, Bettendorf, as a matter of fact. And the whole purpose of this meeting, I'm the chairman of this redistricting commission, and the purpose, our purpose today for having this public hearing is that our commission, the Temporary Redistricting Advisory Commission, as it's called, by Iowa law, is directed to hold at least 3 public hearings throughout the state and receive public input concerning the first proposed redistricting plan. And so the commission will then submit a report on all, and we actually have 4 different public hearings. Everything we hear will be compiled into a report and given to legislators, and we will also make a recommendation based on what we hear from people. But before we go on, I'd like you all to know who the commissioners are. So if we'll start with, to my right, if you'll all introduce yourselves and say where you're from and what your occupation is.
I'm Rose Brown. I'm from Council Bluffs, and I'm employed as city planner for the city of Council Bluffs.
Hi there. I'm Matt Paul. I'm from Des Moines. I have a public relations firm in Des Moines.
Hello, I'm Eric Turner. I'm from Des Moines as well, and I'm a practicing attorney.
And I'm Lance Emke. I'm an attorney from Sioux City, Iowa. Glad to be here, and glad that you're all here, and we're looking forward to hearing from you.
And I think all of you know, I'm a former state senator from here for 18 years, and before that, I was a Scott County supervisor. And now I have a consulting firm, and I'm doing a lot of speaking on the problem of human trafficking, as well as trying to get more women to run for the state legislature and for Congress. But I'd like to talk a little bit, or just give an overview of what our process is for redistricting in Iowa, because we are very unique. No other state does it like this. Our legislative service agency fulfills the duties of presenting a redistricting plan to the legislature. They are nonpartisan people. They are people that are also helping to draft legislation for legislators. And they have combined both the Iowa State Legislative and the National Congressional elected positions. The present Plan 1, and that's been out just since the 31st of March, goes out for public comment before it, even though the legislators have seen it, certainly, this is the whole idea, is to have public comment on this particular plan. And so we are holding, as I said, 4 public hearings, not 3, and they're Council Bluffs, Bettendorf, Cedar Rapids, and Des Moines. And we also have 2 that we're doing ICN. So actually, last night, we were connected also with Sioux City, to Mason City, and to Spencer. And we will also be connected in Cedar Rapids to 3 sites as well. I believe they're Waterloo, Atumwah, and who else?
Dubuque.
Dubuque. Anyway, we are, as I mentioned, then going to compile everyone's comments, and we'll make recommendations. The legislators then will have 3 days to consider, and then they will vote. They cannot change, we cannot change anything of this plan, nor can they. They can vote yes, or they can vote no. And then if they vote yes, that's the end of the process. That is our plan. If they vote no, then the Legislative Service Bureau will have 35 days to draw up a Plan 2. And then the legislators will vote again, yes or no. They cannot change anything. And if they vote yes, that's the end. If they vote no, then the legislative agency, once again, will have a Plan 3, which they have 35 days to do. Plan 3 now may be amended, but all those amendments must be agreed to by a majority of the legislature, not a majority party, just by a majority of the legislature. And then if they do not agree, then the plan goes to the Supreme Court. And as I of Iowa, now I have mentioned to people that in my days of in the legislature, no one wanted the plan to go to the Iowa Supreme Court. So legislators will decide one way or the other which plan to take. In our history of doing this process, it's only been one time that a third plan was even asked for. And that plan, even though it could be amended, was never amended. It was just accepted as is. So that's kind of the our own process. Now, I think before we go on, I would like you to all hear some comments from Ed Cook, who's at the end of the table, and both of you should introduce yourselves. Ed is the senior legal counsel of the Legislative Service Agency, and he was in charge of this process of drawing the map.
Thank you, Chairperson Tinsman. My name is Ed Cook. I'm a senior legal counsel with the Legislative Services Agency. I've been with the agency since 1992, and this will be the second time that I've had this very unique opportunity dealing with redistricting. And essentially at this point, the role of the Legislative Services Agency in regards to Plan 1 is now over. And it's now up to you, the Commission, and ultimately the Legislature and the Governor to decide what to do about Plan Number 1. So I thought I'd kind of give a little background as to how we got to the point we are here today, and a little information is in regards to how the congressional and legislative plan is developed. And what you see up here is basically the result of that work. And so the result of the work was release of the first plan on March 31st, and every legislator got, I'm sure nobody read this part, this is the actual bill legislation that describes the congressional districts, which is fairly simple, it's just counties, as well as all 100 House districts, which is a little more complicated. I got to know a few of the roads in Davenport that I had to describe because there are boundaries between legislative districts. Senate districts are a combination of House districts, and so House District 1 and 2 is then Senate District 1. 3 and 4 is Senate District 2, and so forth as it goes through the process. And so how do we get to the point where we delivered a plan to the legislature? Well, essentially it all begins April 1st, 2010. Every 10 years, the Census Bureau conducts a count of every person in the United States. And that information is then reported to Congress, and then they have to apportion the 435 members of Congress. And so at the end of last year, the Census Bureau reported to Congress as to the number of people in each state and how many legislators, congressmen, congresspersons could be from each state. At that point, Iowa was apportioned 4. You're going to go from 5 to 4. We also knew that the resident population of the state of Iowa was 3,046,355. And that particular number is extremely important for redistricting, because the whole concept of redistricting is to create districts of equal size. As a representative democracy, the concept is a person in one jurisdiction as well as in a different jurisdiction should have an equal opportunity to have their voice heard in whatever entity is being a person's elected to, state legislature, U.S. Congress, or potentially a county supervisor seat if it's done by districts. And so the idea is to try to equalize that population, and every 10 years we get a new count as to the population of the state. But that raw number is not sufficient to do redistricting, and the Census Bureau then provides to each state detailed information as to the location of that 3,046,355 persons. And on February 10th, the Census Bureau delivered population data to Iowa that allowed us to conduct redistricting. And that data pinpoints down to very small units, census blocks, which are generally no more than 5 to 10 people potentially. That make up the entire population of the state. But because we knew that total population number, we knew what the ideal population size was for each congressional district, each state senate district, and each state house district. And so for a congressional district, we knew that the target number was 761,589. For a senate district, 60,927. And for a house district, 344. That's important because the primary goal that we're trying to do is to equalize population. And based on constitutional and state statutory requirements, for congressional districts, the goal is to get the differences between the districts as close to zero as possible. And in fact, of the four districts that were created for Plan 1, the difference between the largest and the smallest district is only 76 people. For legislative districts, the requirements are also fairly strict. For Senate districts, we have to get each of the 50 districts within 1% of that ideal number, which means that no Senate district can vary by that number by more than 609 people, up or down. For state house districts, it can't vary by more than 304 persons, above or below the number of the ideal population. And so that's a primary requirement for both congressional and legislative districts. The other requirement that we have to maintain based on state statutory and constitutional requirements is that we try to respect political subdivisions. For congressional districts, as you can see by looking at the map in the corner, we do not split counties. In fact, the Iowa Constitution provides that no county shall be split in creating a congressional district. And so we have 99 pieces of the puzzle that we have to combine to try to get to that exact number of 761,589. For house districts, what we try to do is to keep as many counties and cities whole. We don't try to split counties up or cities up if we can help it. Some are too large, and we have to split those, but we try to keep the number of times we split those larger cities and larger counties to a minimum. And so if, say, a town should only be split once, such as Bettendorf, it's greater than the size of a house district. It will have to be in at least two house districts, but we try to keep the number of times we split it over and above that to a minimum. In fact, in this legislative plan, we only split it once for a house district. It's in two house districts, not three. And so that's the next requirement that we look at for both congressional and legislative districting, is that we try to keep the number of counties and cities whole. After that, we try to create districts that are of convenient, contiguous territory. The simple explanation of what that means is that you should be able to walk the district and have room to be able to walk it. There's not going to be islands of districts, or you can't be just a district that connects at a point. There's got to be at least room that you can potentially walk your entire district without having to go into an adjoining district at all. Finally, the district should be reasonably compact. What that generally means is you can look at the state of Iowa, and if you have glasses, take your glasses off, and it kind of looks like a big rectangle. And so the Iowa code provides that districts should be reasonably compact, that is, they should be as square and rectangular as possible. Now that's subservient to the other requirements. Population is the first requirement, that's the most important, and obviously we try to keep counties whole, we have to for congressional districts, and we try to keep cities and counties whole as well. But we try to create districts that reasonably follow, that are reasonably compact. The thing that makes Iowa very unique is what we don't take into account when we draw districts. And basically, the Iowa Code specifically provides that we don't take into account addresses of incumbents, political data, party registration data, or election data. So all we're looking at basically is a map on a computer screen with numbers that represent the population of that particular unit. For congressional districts, the population of each county. For legislative districts, the population of a city, if it's small, a township, or a precinct in a larger county. And those various pieces for legislative districting, all we're looking at is that number. There's no dot identifying where an address of a particular legislator might be. We're just looking at those numbers and trying to combine them in a way to maximize all the requirements provided by Iowa law. And so based on all that information, then we present to the legislature a proposed plan, a combined plan of congressional and legislative redistricting. One reason why it's combined is that we try, and this is again a requirement of the Iowa Code, to keep legislative districts within a congressional district. Now, I was able to at least figure out in math that 50 divided by 4 is not an even number. And so you will notice that there are two Senate districts that cross a congressional boundary. Now, I could let you come up there and try to figure out which two they are, but I will tell you right now exactly which ones they are. Up in the northern part of the state, I believe it's District 26, there's a House district on one side of that congressional boundary and a House district on the other side. Those two combined create a Senate district. The other one is in the eastern part of Polk County. There's a House district there, and there's also a House district in Jasper County. Those two legislative House districts combined create a Senate district. Every other Senate district and every House district is wholly contained within a congressional district. And so that big puzzle, our team, myself, Gary Rudisill, and another individual who's a geographer, put together to present to our director to select what we felt was the best plan for both congressional and legislative redistricting. Once that's presented, basically what you have before you today is a temporary redistricting advisory commission whose job is to get input from the public throughout the state in regards to the first proposed plan and then to communicate that information to the legislature, as Chairperson Tinsman has indicated. And then it's ultimately up to the legislature and the governor whether or not to accept or reject the first proposed plan. If rejected, then we go back to work preparing plan number two. If not, it becomes the law of the land for the next 10 years, and we'll do this exercise again in 2021. Goodness. And so that is the process that we've got here, but now it's not really up to what we want to do. It's up to hear from you, and so I'll turn it back over to Chairperson Tinsman to conduct the public hearing.
Thank you, Ed. Now, as far as the procedure is concerned, first of all, I just want to mention you are important to this process. It really is important what you think and why you think, and that's why we're having the public hearing. This is critical to the process. But what we're going to have is two different kinds of testimony, actually. Oral testimony, which means that people need to sign up in the back. And if you haven't signed up, please do that. Even if you're not going to testify orally, if you would please sign up on there's a form that looks like this that's on a table back there, and we need everyone to sign their name on it, even those not wishing to speak, but particularly those wishing to speak. Everyone wishing to speak will be limited to 3 minutes. And if time remains, after all who have signed up to speak have spoken, we will have people who have not signed up prior to the hearing. They wish to speak, they may speak, and then we will also hear additional remarks from those who have already spoken. As far as written testimony, if you don't even want to speak, the commission will accept written testimony in lieu of oral testimony if it's received prior to the start of our public hearing the evening of April 7th. That means by 7 o'clock on April 7th we need written testimony. Also, though, comments can be made via the Iowa redistricting link on the Iowa General Assembly website, and that's www.iowa.gov. So you can put those comments on as well. And it's quite a impressive website, so you really should go to it if you're interested. So I think we will start now. And the first person, and I need to ask, is it Stone, Mr. Stone from Clinton? Do you want to speak?
No.
No. Okay. Fine. All right. Lee McKnight from Davenport. All right. Would you mind just going up there and speaking?
Well, since I'm first, is the microphone working?
Yes.
Okay. Good. I'd like to commend the commission for your hard work, the Legislative Bureau for their hard work, and our forebears for coming up with this with this way of doing redistricting so we don't end up with something like Illinois number 17. I would like to see our first district, oh wait, we're in the second district now, aren't we, to the proposed in Davenport. I'd like to see the second district lined a little bit smoother. I believe that if you could take all four districts and maybe rotate them counterclockwise, one or two counties, then you might end up with a little few smoother lines. The current second district goes from Clinton County in the far east down to Decatur County, which is in far southwest, almost the far southwest. Now, to me, that's a stretch. I've never been in Decatur County. I'm sure it's nice, but maybe it shouldn't be included in the second district. I do have a question for the Legislative Bureau. Did you do all of the computations using online programs or Fortran programs or whatever, or did you do it all manually?
Basically, Legislative Services Agency acquired redistricting software, which provided basically all the geographic information in electronic format, as well as providing all the information in regards to determining the population of districts that we created. So it was a redistricting software program that we had. It wasn't manually with a calculator.
So from start to finish, how long did it take you till you got to the final product from when you first got the information and the software?
Well, essentially, we received information from the Census Bureau on February 10th, and I believe we got kind of the information necessary from the vendor a couple days later. And basically, we used almost the entire 45 or so days until March 31st in order to develop first a plan. Then we had to create a bill, describe all the districts, and we had to create maps. And so it's a fairly lengthy process to do both congressional and legislative districts. And so it pretty much takes about the entire time allotted in order to do the whole plan.
Thank you. I did notice that it appears that Jasper County is like the four corners of Iowa, where it touches, it's in one congressional district, and it touches the other three. So that's the extent of my comments and questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Next is Arthur Heiderman, is it?
I'd also like to start by thanking the Legislative Service Bureau especially, because this commission, I think that I'm truly impressed by the job you've done. I think you've got it right. You have made one man, one vote, one person, one vote, a reality in the state of Iowa like it is no other place in the country. Don't move that. You're going to hear people saying, oh, you split my town in half, or you split my school in half, or whatever. I worked 20 years at the Arsenal, and we had, the way our people were commuted there, we had folks from two different congressional districts that worked at the Arsenal constantly. It gave us the support of two legislators and four senators in Congress. It was powerful. It's the salvation of the Arsenal. So when people have the complaints about splitting representation, what you're doing is you're giving them twice the support. That's all you're doing, because neither representative can ignore them. The important thing is that the people of Iowa truly feel that you got this right. Look around the room. They're not here. They're not angry. They're happy, okay? Happy people stay home. And right now, between the first and the second public hearings, half your public hearings, you got fewer people that are unhappy than your total deviation between the biggest and smallest district. You had 76 deviation, and there was 50 people last meeting and 20 people this meeting. You're doing a good job. Keep it up. Don't let a few people that aren't totally happy change things for 3 million people in Iowa that are. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, and next we have, is it Miles Christie?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the commission. I'm one of those people that I guess is not happy. No, I'm serving my second term as student body president at St. Ambrose University. And actually, before my first term started, more than 2 years ago, I began working on a process with the City of Davenport, the Scott County Auditor's Office, and with the State of Iowa to fix a problem on our campus. Our campus has expanded since the last time the district lines were drawn. And what has created is a situation where half of our student body can vote on campus, and the other half has to vote at us at a location almost a mile away. Roughly 1,500 students are residential students at our campus. In accordance with Iowa state law, they can all vote as Iowa residents regardless of where they, their permanent address is. I'm actually one of those students who is originally from Illinois, but in the 2008 election voted in Iowa as a legal resident of the state of Iowa. The problem this has created is in a sort of a way, we believe, a disfranchisement, and that students that think they could vote on campus cannot and have been either turned away or told to go to the wrong place because oftentimes not everybody knows where they're supposed to go. I had students a couple years ago who told me they A, didn't vote because they didn't know where to vote, or B, they ended up voting at the wrong place but they didn't know that they were voting at the wrong place. And we certainly don't want that. So our process is a city process, okay? Our process is taking two wards and combining them into one. Now, this process can be done starting January 1st of the year after the census and no later than June 30th of that same year. So my first concern is making sure this process is completed in time for us to do that. My second concern was it was brought to my attention last week, and I haven't been able to completely look at the map because it's hard to look really hard at the details, that our wards may actually now be split also by legislative district. Meaning that we could not have one precinct crossing legislative lines if that in case happens. I believe what it looks like is that we may be split into two House districts, that of Cindy Winkler and that of Phyllis Thede. And so if that happens, it really takes away about 2 years of work we've been working on, which again is work that we have support from the city, the Scott County Auditor's Office, and most of the legislators that I have contacted in the state of Iowa, both Republican and Democrat. So I would urge that, again, I need to confirm that this is splitting us in half, but if that has happened, I would urge a no vote from the legislature and to have that fixed so that we can ensure equal opportunity to vote for our youth. Everybody talked about our youth coming out and voting a lot in 2008, but if you look at the numbers, it's still dismal, and we still need to give our youth certainly every opportunity to vote. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next, I really have to ask if any of these people want to speak, because I don't know. One is Marty O'Boyle.
No, thank you.
No? Judy Davidson? Linda Greenlee? John Archer? Pete DeCook? Edith Pfeffer, Dave Rose, is that no? Okay, and then I think there are some people I don't have on the list. And I wonder if I could have a new list. Did everybody sign in who is in this room? I take it that means yes. All right. Tim Phillips. Mm-hmm.
thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. Miles did a far more eloquent job of, than me, as is most the case, with providing information. I'm here as well to represent St. Ambrose University. And again, my interest in supporting what Miles is asking for is simply that we are working to engage our newest voting citizens in the process of being good citizens, and that's being informed voters and casting a vote. And I think when there is confusion, such as we've experienced in the last couple elections that Miles described and that we heard over and over again, it really disenfranchises. And then also folks just say, look, I can't even figure out how to vote. Why would I go to the trouble to vote? And certainly we get quite a bit, we put forth quite a bit of initiative to help students to become informed about elections, become informed about what the issues are, to understand what their civic duties and rights are, and to utilize those as public citizens. And so anything that we can do to make that process a little easier is helpful. Because I also find that once students vote once, then they kind of feel that sense of empowerment, and then they're inclined to vote again. And so we want to make sure that for many of them, that they are voting for the first time on our campus. That it is, in other words, an election comes up after they turn 18 once they come to our campus. And so it's that first opportunity. We want to make it easy as possible. Our local auditor here, Roxana Moritz, has been extremely helpful. And so it's just, as Miles said, what happened was is that we have built residence halls to the east of where the line had been drawn 10 years ago, and that now encompasses approximately 700 students that are now on the other side of that line. And so we're interested in making sure that in some way, shape, or form, the campus, at least the internal part of the campus, can be drawn into one area where that they can all vote on campus in our student union, which is extremely convenient. They also see their peers doing what they think, what they know they ought to be doing, and that helps them to vote as well. So, again, all of any assistance you can offer with that or any consideration, we'd be most indebted to you. I was terribly persuaded by the gentleman here saying, don't listen to folks who want to divide up their schools and that sort of thing. I'm just trying to continue and engage what you're talking about as well.
Mr. Phillips,
let's get you engaged.
We'll note your concern as well as Miles. My question is, have you spoken to the Scott County Auditor about this challenge?
Yes.
Is satellite voting offered on your campus?
Yes.
It was tested, right? Yeah.
Well, it's been there.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
All right. Now, are there some people who would like to speak who have not signed in? Because I know some people here whose names are not on this list. But you're certainly welcome to speak. Is there, who else would like to give us your opinion? Anybody? Yes.
Doug Payton, I will speak if I could.
Tell us your name.
Doug Payton.
Doug Payton?
Yes, I'm signed in.
Okay, good. All right.
I'd like to thank you all for coming to Davenport or Case Bettendorf. And I think what I was expecting to see is probably a bunch of political hacks up here that were trying to manipulate the system, and I'm glad to see that that is not the case. I think there's a lot of cynicism that we have about our political parties and our voting these days, and I, for one, am glad to see some degree or a semblance of objectivity in doing this. We always hear about gerrymandering and some of the political games that are being played, and it's always nice to have the reassurance that there's some degree of ethics involved in the process. I am a parent, and I have four children, three of them who have left the area, one that's still in the area and probably is indoctrinated politically in areas that I don't know. But I too am an Ambrose alumni, and My children came back from school and encouraged me to vote for the bond referendums of the school. They had no idea what it was about. Fortunately, I did. They've all left the area and still paying the tax. So I guess I would like to respond to the Ambrose representatives saying that part of the educational process is learning where to vote, learning the issues, and making it easy to vote. While it's very nice, sometimes you have to understand that it's simply not the ease of voting. It is the ease of attending a session like this and finding out there's not a bunch of political hacks up here. And I am glad that I attended, and I'm glad that I'm going away with some degree of way to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else that would like to address the commission? We really are interested in your opinion, so we want you to, even if you didn't sign up to speak, we'd like very much for you to consider telling us whether you like this or not like this plan, because that's what we are going to be giving to your legislators, your opinions. So if we don't know your opinion, it makes it difficult for us to tell them anything. So anyone else that would really like to
And Madam Chairman, I would join in. It sounds like a plea, but the reality is that we five will be asked to make a recommendation to the legislature at the end of this week after all the sessions. We don't get to make that decision based on our whim or our thinking. We have to make that decision based on what we heard from you. So it is very important that we hear from you. If you would provide comments, we appreciate your being here, and I have to join with Chairwoman Tinsman in saying if you would speak, I would encourage you to do so.
Yes. Would you like to come up? Could you tell us your
David
name?
David Rose from Clinton.
Pardon?
David Rose from Clinton.
Oh, yes. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have a simple question. If the first proposal is turned down, does the second proposal then take the information as your input, or does just the legislators decide to vote up or down from the information you get? And in the second proposal, do they take the information that provided statewide and relook at that?
Well, I think I can answer that. We don't have another second, in other words, we don't have another public hearing for the second plan. So they would use any information that we give them on this plan, from information that you all have given us, and they can use it to vote yes or no on in either plan or in any plan. They won't they'll get probably additional information from constituents that might tell them whether they like the plan or not, but it won't be a formal public hearing. But then they can only vote yes or no. They will not be able to change it any way at all, just like the first plan can't be changed at all either.
Madam Chairwoman, if I could just amplify, and I'm speaking only because I have kind of a unique perspective of having also been on this commission the last 10 years ago. And there we did have the occasion of a second map was drawn. Well, the record that we as the commission are creating now, which is the record of public comment, is the record that will be used throughout the process, however long it goes. So you are correct that while there will be no additional commission hearings, what you are telling us today will affect all of the work until the process is done, not just the map you're seeing today. That's why it's important to hear from you.
Don't all speak at once. Anyone else that would like to say something? Yes. Can you tell us your name?
My name is Dean Stone. I'm from Clinton as well.
Good.
Okay. And thank you for coming to Eastern Iowa. Again, we commend everybody. I think you all did a fine job. You mentioned the three people were associated with the drawing the maps, and you mentioned the geographer. Who might that have been?
The third person, obviously Gary Rudisill, does have a degree in political geography, but the third person is Jody Foran. In fact, 10 years ago, she was a recent University of Iowa graduate, and we hired her temporarily to do the maps. And then she left, got married, went to Colorado, then came back to Iowa and indicated that she would be available to help us out again. And so we did hire her to help us out, and she was one of those, along with Gary, that really did a tremendous job with kind of the moving from just the one color line to the kind of the color maps to kind of give a better representation of the plans. And then you can also go to the website, and we have individual district maps for all of the proposed Senate and House districts that she worked on and was able to get released. You can look on them online, and she helped with that as well. So we're pretty happy with how she's helped us out in this round of redistricting.
I teach up at Clinton Community College, and I teach political science as well as geography, so I've got a foot in both graves, so to speak. I may not be around it in 10 years, but it's very interesting when the students look at how Iowa goes through this process, and then look how other states go through this process. And I always try to tell them, if we've got 50% of the people who don't care for what you all do, and 50% that like it, it's probably a real good plan. So keep up the good work, and we hope it goes through in the first term. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to say yay or nay for the plan that we have? Actually, the map that's all the little, not the whole map of Iowa, but the other map on this side, this is actually the metropolitan areas, and so you'll see that they are divided up differently. So actually, Davenport, Bettendorf's on there. I don't think Clinton is it?
No.
I don't think so, but so you can all see where those, otherwise you look at the map, the big map, and it looks like Scott County. You can't even see where the lines are because there's so many different Senate and state representative districts, but it is blown up for the metropolitan area of Scott County anyway. Anyone else want to say anything? Well, you don't have to just...
Houses.
Oh, good. All right. And tell me your name.
Tom Carney. I also will wish to commend the commission on the job well done, and I'm very proud of how Iowa accomplishes redistricting. My wife and I are of opposite political parties, and I guess maybe my only comment is that when we got to this issue and we looked over the map, we didn't have an argument.
You have interesting discussions in your home. All right, anyone else like to say anything? Sure. Because we don't have to just sit here and look at each other, but we'd sure like to give anybody else a chance, or if anybody else wants to say something additional, even though you've spoken, that's available also. Okay, well, then I guess I move that the public hearing be closed. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, I think we are adjourned.
Thank you for coming, everybody.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.